Right now it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz. It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning here on Robin Hood Radio. Good morning, Arthur.
I'm live on Monday morning.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm happy to be alive on Monday morning. I don't know if I mentioned this, maybe in passing, that Bob and I are planning a trip to the Caucasus, Azerbaijan, Georgia, and perhaps even Armenia, which are the three countries that are considered the Caucasus, from which we get the word Caucasian, by the way. So I guess we're all descended from the Caucasus.
But I
haven't done my complete study on this yet, so there's a good question to answer. Pardon me?
I wonder how it relates to the word caucus that we use in this country in elections.
Oh, that's a good question, too. Well, since Bob is the etymologist in the family, it'll be the first thing I ask him when he gets up this morning. To go do the research on this, because we haven't done that yet. We've done some other things. And, of course, I'm exploring the food, because I like to know beforehand something about the country and the food, and then I can appreciate the be there much more, I think. For me, it is, anyway, like that. Now, what, in fact, spurred this interest in the Caucasus, besides that I have been to Georgia, when it was Soviet still, to the capital city, Tbilisi, which actually reminded me a lot of Flatbush, because a lot of the buildings are red brick buildings like we have here, and they have the same London plane trees that we have here. Anyway, I'm very, very eager to get back to Tbilisi. So what spurred this interest was that we have been going to an Azerbaijani restaurant here in Brooklyn. There is an Azerbaijani population in New York City, mostly in Brooklyn, but also in Queens, in Flushing. Not Flushing. Kew Gardens, maybe Forest Hills. There are different communities, though. The Azerbaijani and the Uzbekis in Queens are mostly Sabbath and kosher observing Jews, whereas in Brooklyn they are not. I mean, they may be Jewish, but they're not observant so much. The Azerbaijan is on the Caspian Sea. The main city is Baku. And a lot of people identify as being from Baku, but they won't tell you Azerbaijan because they know you as an American might not even know where it is. In any case, I do have some cookbooks on the cuisines of Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia, and I've been perusing them and actually cooking a few very, very simple things. Now, this is not going to sound simple, but I did make a small batch of mandarin preserves called in my book on the Caucasus. I would call it mandarin marmalade because it's made with the peel, the skin of the mandarins. It is super easy to do. It is very gratifying to have a jar of your own marmalade. And I, next time I do it, I might actually do a double batch. Because, for one thing, at this moment, they're practically giving away the mandarins in my neighborhood. So I bought a big bag of them. I must say, they were only mediocre to eat, although we ate plenty. And 1 pound, this recipe only makes 1 pound. And 1 pound is only five, maybe at the most, six mandarins. So it's very, and it's easy. So it takes a long time, only because you have to soak the mandarins whole in a big bowl of cold water. Now, having made candied orange peel and marmalades before, I know that if you don't soak the rinds, they will be too bitter. But just soaking them in cold water. Now, my Azerbaijani recipe only told me to do this for like 12 hours. I knew that was going to be too bitter for my customer and my main customer. And so I did what I normally do with my, which I learned in southern Italy, where citrus is a main crop, is I soaked the mandarins overnight, well, let's say 24 hours. I soaked them 24 hours, changing the water after 12. So basically, I put them up 7 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock at night, I changed the water, and then the next 7 o'clock in the morning, I was able to do the next step, which is to cut the mandarins in half through the equator, and then cutting each of those half mandarins into half-moon slices about a quarter of an inch thick. There is a stem end to the mandarin that you will have to cut off and discard. Other than that, you want the whole thing. There are no seeds in mandarin, so it makes it super easy. Put all these quarter-inch slice, half-moon slices of a mandarin back in the bowl and put on 1 1/4 cups of granulated sugar. Now, my recipe calls for actually for super fine sugar, but I found that was unnecessary, and as I've explained before, I always run my granulated sugar from the bag into the food processor to get it a little finer. And it worked fine. I mean, the thing is, plain old granulated sugar would be fine. However, you do want to stir it a few times in the beginning and then after a little bit to make sure that the sugar is dissolving in the 1 1/2 cups of water. I didn't tell you. 1 1/4 cups of sugar and 1 1/2 cups of water. And let that sit for another day. Or at least 12 hours, and then put it in a saucepan, bring it to a boil, and you let it simmer for an hour-ish until it's thick. It's not going to be as thick as it will be once it cools down, but an hour-ish seems to be enough. And that's it. Pour it into a clean or even sterilized jar. It'll sit on your counter for a while, but, you know, for longer storage, keep it in the refrigerator. And it's really nice to have your own preserves. It's so easy, right? Now, why do you have to let it sit with the sugar? That helps develop the pectin that is natural to the fruit. If any of you out there have ever made jams or jellies using fruits that are low in pectin, for instance, berries, you know when you add pectin, which is a product you can buy in the supermarket, when you add pectin, you also have to add a lot of sugar. Because I don't know the chemistry here. I just know that pectin requires sugar to activate, so to speak, and pectin is the gel. By the way, just as a little sidebar, it's the secret, I think, to the creaminess. Everybody always comments on the creaminess of my applesauce, and it's because the sugar and the apples are very high in pectin, and I always cook my applesauce with the peels still on, and that's where a lot of the pectin comes from the portion closest to the skin. So that was my little Azerbaijani adventure, although I did make one other thing that was super easy. You know, I'm looking through this book, and there's a spice mixture that I haven't yet put together myself, and some of the recipes call for that. And at least Azerbaijan is known for its grilled meats, and I have no facility for grilling meats, so that was out. But this was an easy thing. I had a couple zucchini. I've been getting, strangely for January, getting very good zucchini, medium-sized zucchini. They're not like, you know, the sweet ones you get in the late spring, but these are great for January, and I'm assuming into February. But what I did was you slice them lengthwise into quarter-inch slices. This is not hard to do, even with minimal knife skills. If you really want to use a mandolin, go ahead and do that. It won't fit. A whole zucchini will not fit in your food processor. But I do it with the knife. They don't have to be exactly a quarter of an inch, but that's more or less what you want. And, by the way, do not discard the green ends, because I cook them up just the same as the middle pieces, and, you know, it's delicious. It may not look quite as nice, but it's delicious. So these are fried zucchini I'm going to make, cutting off, of course, the stem end and the tiny tip of the flower end. And I dredged mine in flour. This really ends up being the barest coating of all-purpose flour. My instructions from my Azerbaijani recipe are to flour it or not flour it. So I floured it. And then I cooked it in a quarter of an inch in a skillet, in a cast iron skillet, with about a quarter of an inch of hot vegetable oil. Now, I like to fry. And these were not greasy in the end. The way I tell whether the oil is hot enough for the zucchini or whatever I'm frying is I put the handle, the tip of the handle of a wooden spoon in the oil. And if the you can tell by how quickly the bubbles gather around the wooden spoon how hot the oil is. And I want my oil to bubble around the spoon immediately, but not furiously. That'll be about 375 degrees. As soon as you add the zucchini, it's going to cool down. So it'll be at the perfect temperature. And that's it. Fry the slices of zucchini. It'll take, I did two zucchini. It took a couple of panfuls, a couple of batches. Put it on, spread them out on a platter. You could sprinkle them with a little bit of salt. And then you make a yogurt dressing for them. Now, you could do this ahead and serve them the zucchini hot. I made the zucchini and served them at room temperature with this yogurt dressing of about three-quarters of a... This was for two medium zucchini. Three-quarters of a cup of yogurt, of regular yogurt, not strained Greek yogurt, regular old yogurt. I use whole milk yogurt. With one clove of garlic, finely chopped, and a couple of pinches of salt, and mix that all together. That's your dressing. It should not be too thick. It should be runny, and because if you stir regular yogurt as opposed to Greek yogurt, it is runny. And drizzle that over the zucchini. If you want to, if you have a little extra, you can serve it on the side. But we did not have any. Well, we did have extra, but we ate it on the side. There was not a drop left for two people. Three-quarters of a cup of yogurt, it's not so much. Another way to do that dressing, by the way, is to stir in a tablespoon, if you want to add a little protein, more protein to this dressing, you can add a tablespoon of tahini. I happen to like that stirred into yogurt. And then you want an herb. If you have parsley, I happen to have dill in the house, so we had it with dill. Delicious. Fried zucchini with this yogurt, garlic dressing, and some chopped dill. Who could want more?
You know, it does all go together.
With a piece of bread, it could be lunch. Maybe we'll have that for lunch today.
Wouldn't it be better with a pita, a piece of pita?
And a piece of, well, yeah, that's always bread. I actually have been, speaking of pita, I have been trying out various whole wheat pita that I can buy in my various neighborhood markets. There's a dramatic difference between these whole wheat pitas. And one that I really like the flavor of, and it's very, very wheaty, and has more fiber than the other ones, too, has the unfortunate feature of you can't separate the, you can't make a pocket out of it. They won't separate. So when I had a couple loaves, that if I didn't eat them, they were going to be disposed of, I decided pita chips. And interestingly, this double pita, this whole wheat pita, made sensational pita chips because they were super crunchy because it wasn't just one, I don't know. It was the bread itself, too. By the way, this is a locally made pizza bread. We have enough Middle Easterners in Brooklyn to have, I don't even know how many pizza bakeries, but I can buy three different whole wheat pizzas just in my neighborhood. But I have to say, here in Brooklyn, a lot of the supermarkets are owned by Middle Eastern people. One of my supermarkets is owned by, well, more than one, come to think of it. One of them is owned by Yemeni people, and another one is owned by Palestinians. And everybody welcomes a lot of refugees, so it's all mixed up and wonderful now, especially since some of the I've discovered some of the Middle Eastern women who are cashiers in these two supermarkets. Well, one of them. Now, the other one doesn't necessarily have Middle Eastern cashiers, but one of them has several, and they cook. So I not only can get recipes from them while I'm checking out, one of them actually makes some of the salads in the deli department, and I will, from time to time, buy her salads, too, although I'm not a person who buys prepared foods. Now, do we have enough time for me to talk about chicken tikka masala?
Can I tell you something before? Because my father forced us to eat wheat germ when I was a kid, I can't stand anything, pita, bread, or anything, that's wheat. I just can't.
Oh.
Can't.
Well, that's a shame because I can't stand anything that's white.
I know.
Well, unless it's in like a really crusty whatever. I mean, I don't eschew white bread totally, but I much prefer. I don't like, you know, most whole wheat bread has very little whole wheat in it. Maybe you could change your palate by starting out with something that's very mildly wheat. You know, something that where I always say it's white bread with brown food coloring. It's not really whole wheat bread. There's a lot of that around, too.
All right. Well, we have about 8 or 9 minutes if you want to get
into it. Oh, well, chicken tikka masala doesn't take that long because this is a new discovery for me. I'm always in the market, I should say, for a Chinese or Indian recipe that I can do without too much special technique, let's say, and also with ingredients that I might have in the house. So a couple of weeks ago, it must be at least a couple of weeks ago, there was a recipe in the New York Times for Indian butter chickpeas. And it's a recipe from Melissa Clark. It was a big spread on vegetarian recipes, not vegan. I'll get to that in a sec. But anyway, Indian butter chickpeas. So I made this recipe because I had everything in the house except for a can of coconut milk. And so I went out. That was an easy thing to find. Gotta say, I have since done a little research on such kind of recipes. The real recipe is Indian butter chicken. This is Indian butter chickpeas. And most of them are made with cream, with dairy cream. And I'm wondering why Melissa decided to, I can call her Melissa, she's also my neighbor here in Brooklyn, why Melissa decided to use coconut milk. I loved the result, and I will make this, I'm sure, over and over again in various ways, but I really am curious. I, in fact, looked up the nutritional profile of coconut milk, which is, by the way, used a lot these days in contemporary pan-Asian cooking. And it is actually more fattening than heavy cream. It does have, perhaps, a better profile overall, but you're not saving calories, for sure, by using coconut milk instead. Coconut milk, not even coconut cream, coconut milk instead. Anyway, this came out great, and I, having, you know, limited experience cooking such dishes, realized when I was eating it that this was more or less the sauce for chicken tikka masala. So, of course, now I'm curious and want to make some chicken for this. But this is an easy, easy thing. It comes under the category of three cans are better than one. You have canned tomatoes, canned coconut milk, and canned chickpeas. I can keep these in my pantry forever. I always have them on hand. If I was rewriting what to cook when you think there's nothing in the house to eat, I would probably put this recipe. So all you do, now I want to try making this, by the way, with oil instead of butter, even though I know the butter adds a lot of flavor to this, especially it's 4 tablespoons of butter. But I have a vegan friend who I know would appreciate this if it didn't have the butter.
What oil
are
you going to use?
I'm going to just try it. So 4 tablespoons of butter, saute a large onion, meaning like an 8-ounce onion, which I cut, I finely minced, and saute it until it actually the edges start getting a little brown. You want a little brown here. This takes a while over medium heat. It could take 15, 20 minutes, I find. And by the way, so does Melissa. Don't be fooled by recipes that tell you to cook the onions for 8 minutes or 5 minutes. They will not brown in 5 minutes or 8 minutes. When the edges of the onions are starting to brown, and the onions, well, in general, the onions are starting to brown, add 4 cloves of garlic. Don't speak up, Jill.
Ha.
This all gets disguised in the end. 4 garlic cloves, finely chopped. Melissa says, finely grated. I'm not into grating garlic. I finely chopped it. 1 tablespoon of finely chopped fresh ginger. 2 teaspoons of cumin. 2 teaspoons of sweet paprika. I might use hot paprika next time, only because I have some in the pantry I want to use up, and also because we don't like things too hot, and I think that's sort of a medium hot product. And then I'll skip the hot pepper later. 2 teaspoons of garam masala, which I now do keep in my pantry because I'm always attempting some Indian thing or other, and then abandoning it. But this one I won't abandon. And a cinnamon stick. And you put all this in with your sautéed garlic and ginger and onions. You know, after the onions are done, add the garlic and the ginger and let that cook another minute or so until it gets fragrant. And then add the spices and mix them in. And then add in 1 28-ounce can of whole peeled plum tomatoes. 1 28-ounce can, that's the big can. And as soon as you add them to the pan, start chopping them up with whatever instruments you'd like to use. In this case, you might actually want to take your potato masher, but I just use the edge of my spoon, or actually I have a flat spatula, wooden spatula, and that's great for chopping up tomatoes right in the pan. And you chop them up and with all the juices, and then you add 1 can. Now, Melissa says a 15-ounce can, but I didn't see 15-ounce cans. Whatever can you get. I think mine was 13 and a half ounces. Sure enough, you know, they probably have reduced the amount in a can, but kept the price the same. So basically they raised the price on coconut milk. And let that simmer all together, the tomatoes, the coconut milk. You're going to need some salt, let's say 1 teaspoon of salt, and let that simmer for about 10 minutes. And then add your chickpeas, which is 2 15-ounce cans of chickpeas drained. In this case, just toss the liquid down the drain, meaning drained. And let that simmer together, the sauce with the chickpeas. Now you can correct your salt and pepper. I always correct salt, by the way, before pepper, because once you add pepper, well, you don't need so much salt. So if you're on a low-salt diet, let me say, just add more pepper. And that's it. That is the whole thing. I served this over rice. It has no animal protein in it. One night we actually had it with hard-cooked eggs, which I thought was a great addition, actually, as a protein. And one night we had nothing with it. Just like that. And that this batch with 2 cans of chickpeas was really more than 4 servings. I would say it was 5 or 6 servings. And so it goes a long way. Now, as soon as we ate this, we said, ah, chicken tikka masala without the chicken. So I did a little research. Now, I happen to know, because I have an Indian neighbor, and we were talking the other day, and I don't remember how we got to chicken tikka. She got to chicken tikka masala, and how it's not an Indian dish, that it's an English dish. And, of course, I knew she was right. That doesn't mean Americans don't love it any less. It's like General Tso's chicken. I mean, I'm sure there's no General Tso's chicken in China.
That's right.
But I know, but people like
it
anyway.
It's the most popular Chinese
Israel.
Dish in America.
And Israel.
And chicken tikka masala, which is basically just, you know, chicken. White, usually boring and dried white meat chicken in a sauce that is like this, if not exactly like this. So anybody can look this up, by the way. It's in the New York Times cooking website, which is what? cooking.nytimes.com.
Is that right, or is it NYT?
I'm looking at it right now, so right. I know it's cooking.nytimes.com.
But you have to be a member.
Then you'll go do a search for Indian butter chickpeas.
If you are
I have
so
to say, I do not, I like being vegetarian at least several days a week, and it's not hard to do at all. Other people are discovering this. And chickpeas are one of my favorite vegetarian nights. I mean, it's a high-carb legume, but it's also the highest in protein, along with lentils. And it's very, I guess you say, low on the glycemic index, which means that it's metabolized very slowly. So it's like one of the best carbs there is.
All right.
Yeah.
You got it all in.
Yeah. Well.
You didn't do oven. We'll do that next week.
What's that?
Oven temperature, but I can't.
Oven temperature. Well, we don't have time today for this. That you know what? That can be my cooking lesson next week.
Okay.
All right. People loved your cooking.
A little discourse on oven temperatures.
Okay.
Just so you know.
And also, by next week, I will have tasted, not just discovered, found some really affordable new, meaning 2019 harvest olive oil, which I have been searching for since the end of last year. Of 2019. I don't know why. It was not a bad olive oil year in Italy. We should be getting good oil coming in. I already got Cecilia's own oil hand delivered to me the other day, and it's really, really good this year.
All right, and just to wrap it up, General Tso's chicken was named after Zhou Zongtang, who was a Qing Dynasty statesman, but when everybody traced it back, nobody had any record of anybody making General Tso's chicken.
No, I'm sure.
It's totally American.
Yeah, totally. It's like the word. Speaking of nutrition or nutrition profile, it's probably the worst dish on the whole menu. Too. It's double fried. Think about that.
That's why it's so popular. Goodbye.
Of course, and with sugar, no less.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye. Have a great week, everyone.
You too, Bob.
Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio and RobinHoodRadio.com. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.